So I'm going to get us started. So take a nice deep breath. And exhale. And you might want to stand for this if you sit a lot all day long. Just soften your knees, relax your shoulders, as if you've got little 5-pound sandbags on each shoulder. Feel your neck lengthening. And just your energy opening and deepening and expanding easily, as if it's just flowing from you. And it's flowing so easily that it just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding into infinity. And you feel your expansion totally rippling in the now. Feel yourself spilling as if you are a cup that runneth over and over and over. There is so much magnificence and brilliance present when you are in this expanded, relaxed awareness. And so much more when we meet one another from our expanded awareness. So feel the meeting of conscious being to conscious being, our conscious connection and expansion. And allow the rippling of what's here for you in this moment, in the conversation with Julia Stewart and Adela, and the conversation of an abundant practice of a conscious business that serves and enlivens everyone. Thank you, everyone. So our guest today at the Conscious Business Telesummit is one of my favorite people, Julia Stewart. And I know Julia Stewart. I remember our meeting was, we were dancing. I was dancing.
Yeah.
At a Coachville conference.
Yeah.
And we happened to be riding the same shuttle to the airport, and we connected. Mm-hmm. And it was just serendipity from that moment forward, the synchronicities, the kinds of things that happen when mm-hmm. each one of us is being who we are. I mean, Julia just came up to me and said, oh, I love your dancing or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it was interesting because something was seeded in that moment where we each connected with one another that was so beautiful that it continues mm-hmm. to flourish to this day. And what we're going to be talking about today really relates to that experience, because a lot about a conscious business is about being authentically who you are, and it is about being present to the possibility that there's a lot more abundance than you might even imagine is possible for you, just right in here, not even 5 years from now, 10 years from now, after the training finishes or whatever. But we're actually, isn't that true, Julia?
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to be touching on that, and specifically the content of our call today is about the hidden treasure behind your true fans, how to earn 6 figures with a 3-figure list. And I will tell you that it does begin with being a fan. I am a fan of Julia Stewart.
We're mutual fans. That's the funny thing.
Well, it's and that's how... But that's the truth of it, and that's how it happens. And when
yeah.
you really get the essence of another person and you see their brilliance and their magnificence, and Julia, when I worked with her at the Fully Alive community at Coachville, really saw me into being in a much bigger way. It was just such a beautiful experience of working with her that mm-hmm. I became more because of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of experience that we're talking about in terms of your true fans and your being authentically who you are and living into your greatness, which Julia is a master at.
So, oh, well, thank you.
You really are. You are just an amazing coach. So let me tell you a little bit more about Julia. She's a coach, and she's also an unbelievable coach trainer and seminar leader, and she uses her creativity and humor to expand people's thinking and inspire them to work brilliantly. She's the founder of the School of Coaching Mastery, and her coaching specialty is helping conscious-preneurs attract true friends with grace and dignity. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you, Adela. Yeah, I can't remember who it was. It might have been John who said something about you and me, and I said, yeah, we're soul sisters. And I really don't use that term that often, but it's definitely works. And, yeah, true fans can come in a lot of different packages, and you and I have kind of a unique true fan relationship, because even though we've known each other for years and we're colleagues, we still sign up for each other's stuff. So we spend our money too.
Yeah, and that's a big piece. I was just talking about that with Mary, who just said hello a little bit earlier. We were having a conversation mm-hmm. earlier today, and there's something to that, spending your money. It really is, and I still, yeah, I just signed up for something of yours. But you know what happens too with true fans, which I think is what happens between you and I, is that we're really in the work that we're being, and so mm-hmm. since we're so in the work keeps evolving, our work keeps evolving. So there's always something, some new invitation that's exciting.
Yeah.
Right? That uh-huh. that you want to be a part of. So
absolutely.
So that whole thing about your being your brilliance and being uniquely you, it's not like you ever get tired of someone's brilliance. Right? Because it keeps showing up, and so there's another mm-hmm. and a next invitation, and there's always more to experience. So beautiful.
Yeah. Awesome.
So
yeah.
You know, that's a pretty big promise. I loved that title, How to Earn Six Figures with a Three-Figure List. Because, you know, a lot of times people say, hey, the money's in the list, and they're talking about, you know, unless you have 5,000 people on your list, you can't even start a membership site, and you can't really prosper until you have a list of, you know, 50,000.
Oh, my. You know, yeah, if you're selling something for $19.95 and you want to make a living, you do need a huge list. And if you're not really delivering on what you offer so that people try you once and go away, then, yeah, you need a big list and you need to keep growing it, because it's not going to sustain itself. But when I think of conscious-preneurs, and correct me if I've got it wrong, Adela, I think of course, coaches as one form of a conscious-preneur, but I also think of massage therapists, nutritionists, Qigong masters, people who really care about what they're doing and are usually delivering pretty much a high-end service. Is that what a lot of the people who are on this call are coming from?
I know, yeah, I think a lot of them are. Some of them are actually mm-hmm. new to coaching and actually excited about finding out more about coaching.
Well, I'm always happy to talk about that. But I thought we'd start a little more general, and we can use coaching as an example. But, yeah, well, coaching specifically, and certainly massage therapy and many other conscious services, they're kind of expensive. I mean, there certainly are less expensive options for them, but a good coach usually charges by the month, but often as far as contact hours with the client, it comes out to hundreds of dollars per hour sometimes. And the coach is, in fact, giving that much value to their client, and the clients often become what are called true fans. And
So that's really the secret behind earning a six-figure income with a three-figure list. And honestly, I think it could be a smaller list than that. But just to elaborate on it a bit, I want to tell where I first heard the term true fans and where this little light bulb came on. And it was kind of a fun discovery because I've heard all this stuff about, you know, yeah, you need a list of 5,000, you got to start making your products, you don't want to be a slave to your appointment book, all of that. It sounds great, and some of it's exciting and fun. But the truth is, that's not how I've made my living most of my life. I've had one business or another for 20 years or so, and I didn't have a huge list most of that time. Fortunately, I was ignorant of the fact that I was supposed to have a big list. And I'll just use one example of this is maybe one of the truest fans that I've had. She has been a client of mine for 20 years. So since my very first business, and my very first business was a dance and exercise studio in my attic. So I had this extra space in my home, and I was a dance teacher back then. I needed to make more money, and I said, hey, well, let me use this space to do what I love to do. And so I developed a small following. I lived on a little island in New York City called City Island, and I developed a following. And one of those people was a friend of my landlady. And she started coming to my exercise classes 20 years ago. Later on, when I was no longer teaching exercise classes, but I was a personal trainer, she became a personal training client of mine, so she was paying more per hour for that. Then after I became a coach, I invited her to try that out, and she's still a coaching client today. She's one of the first coaching clients I ever got. And so I no longer teach exercise, and I no longer do personal training, but she's a personal coaching client of mine. And as I was thinking about this class, I thought about approximately how much money has she spent with me in the past 20 years, and I would guess it's about $48,000. And she's a middle-class person. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money to spend with one person, and she's still enthusiastically coming back. So after I was going to tell you where I first heard about this, and it was by reading some blogs. And I think reading great blogs is an awesome way to be really informed about what's going on right now. And I'm not sure who I first heard it from, if it was Seth Godin or Kevin Kelly, who used the term true fan, but Kevin Kelly coined the term. And his definition of a true fan, and he was using it for artists, he said most artists who are working and making a living make a good living with 1,000 or fewer fans. And he defined a true fan as somebody who spends about a day's pay every year with that same person. And so I thought about that, and I thought, yeah, I think coaches have ultra true fans because most of us don't even have a list of 1,000, and yet we're making a living, and most of our clients spend more than a day's pay with us. But just to tell you where I got that number, how to make a six-figure income with a three-figure list, I just extrapolated from some math that Kevin Kelly did, and I said, well, okay, most of the time, our ideal clients are fairly affluent. They may not be rich, but they're not struggling with working at McDonald's. They maybe make around $50,000. That's kind of a moderately affluent income, and so a day's pay would be about $200 for somebody making $50,000 a year. So if you're a massage therapist or you are, I don't know, you give facials or you do tarot or something, and you see a client once or twice a year, they probably do spend at least $200. So if you've got 500 people spending $200 every year with you, that's $100,000 right there. Mm-hmm. It's so easy. And if you consider that the people you really develop a relationship with, that you really connect with, kind of like you and I do, Adela, mm-hmm. although they don't have to be as connected as you and I, but just a good connection, those people are going to spend way more than $200 with you every single year.
Yeah,
and go ahead.
No, one of the questions that I had for you was around this building the relationship. Was it a matter of investing time, or was it about, or is it about the kind of connection that's created?
Yeah, you know, I think it's more about investing yourself than about investing your time.
Yeah.
And just going back to my early solid days, I didn't know anything about marketing. But all I knew was that I liked what I did. And I liked the people who were showing up in my studio, and many of us became friends. We invited each other to our parties, and so I developed relationships with them. And those relationships varied from one person to another. So, you know, some people on this call may have read Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point, and he talks about connectors and mavens and salesmen and how they cause an awful lot to happen in the world. And one of the people that I connected with early on in my business was someone who, she's one of my best friends today. She's a real connector and a bit of a salesman and a maven all rolled into one. Mm-hmm. And she would just go around. She knew everybody in our community, and she would just go to one person after another and say, "You've got to take Julia's class. It's really great." And so she funneled a lot of business to me. And after a while, I kind of woke up and realized I need to cultivate this.
Mm-hmm.
So I began doing things like giving her free personal training just as a way to thank her for something that she naturally did anyway. But really investing yourself, and I'm guessing if you're a consciouspreneur, you've got a real connection to yourself that many other people haven't really cultivated yet. And particularly if you're a coach or someone who is cut out to be a coach, you've probably got excellent relating skills. So when you're not thinking about making sales and making money and all of that stuff, you show up authentically as a caring person, and you connect with people in a real authentic way. And that's what people really want. I can give you an awesome example of how you can kind of take it to a whole other level, if you like.
Yeah, I would love that. Yeah,
well, all my students and clients know by now probably that I'm a huge fan of Genpo Roshi, who is a American Zen master who does something called Big Mind, Big Heart. And anybody here who's never experienced it, if you get a chance to go to a free call or something, go. But anyway, I just came back from a retreat at his Zen center in Salt Lake City. And I've done a lot of things with him already. I've gone to live events. I've bought DVDs, books, all of that stuff. And he's got a great website. He's apparently got excellent people who advise him on marketing and so forth. And his business is really a 501c business. So it's a spiritual organization, and it's not for profit. However, they operate on a semi-profit business. He really thinks the not-for-profit model is actually going to go away. He thinks that spirit and the marketplace are going to converge in the 21st century, which is really cool. Well, I'm a huge fan, as I've said, and he has something called the Big Heart Circle. And the Big Heart Circle is a group of people, I know who a few of his students are, and they're multimillionaires, famous actresses, etc. And these people have a lot of money, of course. And so he does something several times a year called a 5-5-50, where he gets together with four of his students for 5 days at some resort. They spend all day together for 5 days, and each one pays $50,000. And The first thing that I want to say is that I'm such a fan of his that when I first read about that, my first thought was, I want to make enough money that I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not, oh my God, who does he think he is? But rather, I want to do that. No question about it. And as I read further, the whole purpose behind it was for them to raise money, get rid of the debts that they had associated with the buildings that they had bought, and have money left over so that the retreats and books and DVDs and free stuff on the website is all paid for, and they can make it available to people who don't have millions of dollars. So they found a business model that is pretty audacious. I mean, he said, I had to really challenge myself. Am I worth $50,000 in 5 days? But he did it, and he doesn't keep the money. It goes to the organization. And that's – so I'm an Ultra True fan. I rather than thinking he's full of it for charging so much money, I'm thinking, I'm going to spend that money. I'm going to figure out a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times consciouspreneurs worry about charging too much. And the truth is, if you've got true fans, they're happy to spend the money because they are getting the value.
Yeah, that is so true. And I also had a question around that because I think that we're the ones that have the barrier to receiving the money. And I wondered, Julia, if you could speak a little bit about mastery and its relationship to what you charge.
Yeah. It's got a huge correlation to what you charge. So just to use Roshi as an example again, he's a bona fide Zen master. He's got 40 years of doing all the things that Zen masters do, and he's gone so far with it that his just pure humanness, he's just an all-American guy who rides a motorcycle, but his just regular humanness, his sense of humor, his ability to joke in the middle of some of the most profound conversations, just make him incredible to be around. And the whole Zen master thing, I've told a few people about this, but the first time I ever saw him, I immediately felt enormous unconditional love, not for him, but for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time I had a contact with him, I was actually meditating. He entered the room after the meditation started, and all of a sudden I had this great sense of joy. And I opened my eyes and he was right in front of me. And I thought, wow, how does he do that?
Mm-hmm.
But he's a Zen master. And that's how he just has this extraordinary charisma. But mastery at anything communicates in an extraordinary way. The fact that you love what you do causes you to show up in a different way. The fact that you have a burning desire to learn everything and be the best that you can be and give the best possible service and keep learning and practicing so that you're showing up and giving more and providing value. People, isn't that what we all want? If you could just connect to the auto mechanic who does a brilliant job with your car every time, and there's no BS. You don't have to worry if he's lying to you. It's just, I discovered one of those, and I thought, wow, that is so great that I've got a mechanic that I believe in now. And another thing about that, Adela, is that the economy is really shifting to, as you know, there's just so much free stuff available on the internet because partly because the internet makes it easy for us to provide free value, and partly because there's really no other reason for somebody to come to your website unless you've got some content that they really want to access. And if they don't know you yet, they don't know if they want to spend money yet. So free content that people can access and get a taste of your brilliance is one of the most effective ways to market now, and very clean and agenda-free way of marketing also. But you've got to balance the books somehow. And as it turns out, people will pay a lot extra for extra contact with you or extra personal service. So $50,000 to spend 5 days with Genpo Roshi, that's an example of an extra that people will pay for. And so as you have perhaps free products or even paid for products, the whole product funnel thing, those are ways for people to get a taste of you without committing very much. But your true fans, they want more. And I think everyone on this call is capable of developing true fans. Even if we don't all get to the point where we can charge $50,000 for 5 days, we can still get to the point where there are a handful of people, maybe 20, maybe starting with 10. I know Seth Godin said you can start a business today with just 10 people who are excited about what you do. And he said, in fact, that's the only way to start a business today. And that is the only way to market today. Start with 10 people who love you. But everyone here can develop that with a small group of people, maybe 10, maybe 500, maybe 1,000. And be in communication with them. If they've got contact with you, they're asking you questions. And those questions are clues to you about where to go with your business next. Or you can just call them up on the phone and say, you know, I'm working on my next project for 2010 or whatever, and I'm wondering, what do you need this year? What could I provide that would really make a difference to you? And that just asking that question is a perceived value to somebody who needs your help. But finding out what they want and the format they'd like to have it in and perhaps even what they want to spend on it, that will save you thousands of dollars and thousands of hours of production time creating your next workshop or your next e-course or whatever you're working on.
Yeah, that's a priceless tip. Right there, that one-on-one contact. I'm only just discovering that myself recently. It's so funny. In the last series that I did, just because it was me, and it's me alone this time too, but I put my phone number on my sales page because I said, you know, I don't want these people to think they don't know me, so just in case they want to figure out whether she's a scammer or not, there's a phone there and they can call me, right?
Yeah.
Sure enough, Julia, I got so many phone calls from people with questions about this and questions about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even something that I thought about consciously. It just started happening. I was talking about answering their question, and then we'd get into a conversation. And in that conversation, they were happy to talk to me, you know, because I was leading the series and I had all this content and all this information and I was answering their questions. But I was so happy to talk to them because I got to find out who the people were that were interested in what I was doing.
Yeah. You got to find out more about them, and that helps you to target what they want even better.
Yeah. And I think that nowadays we can get so used to email as a form of connection and communication.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I really have discovered that email for an initial connection, to set up a time to talk, is really priceless.
It
because
is.
Because you want to connect person to person and find out, you know, who are the people that are interested in what you're doing? What are they interested in? What do they need? What are their questions?
Yeah.
That is like the shortcut to a lot of the marketing testing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why spend your time? Because you can have a brilliant idea where it sounds pretty brilliant. I know I've had lots of those, you know. It feels pretty brilliant.
Mine are always brilliant to me.
Right? Mine are really pretty brilliant, and I'm like, wow, that's a great idea, you know, without even checking to see if that's anything that anybody wants. And probably the first 5 years of my business was probably like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that connection, that one-on-one connection, which is something, I remember when I was at Coachville, and I had gotten so excited about the multiple streams. Andrea Lee had come out with her book.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I was so excited about it. And I remember something that Dave Buck said to me at the time. he's like, don't jump into group coaching, because I was all excited about the group coaching model.
Yeah.
He's like, don't jump into the group coaching until you've done enough one-on-one coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to that one-on-one connection that happens in the coaching.
Yeah.
That in terms of really getting to that level of mastery that you're talking about, I don't think you can bypass that, can you?
I don't think so. And I think there's definitely something to what Dave has to say about it. For one thing, many people don't really understand what a close relationship a coach and client actually have. I actually talk about, you know, in at the masterful level, the boundary between coach and client starts to dissolve. And that sounds really woo-woo and weird, but there is such a strong connection in a really great coaching session that it's almost like the relationship itself is coaching. And the coach's effort, their work that they're putting into it seems almost like nothing. But the client, at least to the coach, it seems like nothing. But the client is getting incredible value out of it. And I think it's just as simple as if you're somebody who has had a lot of phone conversations with your target market and you just know them and their needs and their problems and the kinds of solutions that work for them, it's so easy for you to serve them that it's like instant brilliance. You know, like there was that old thing about instant karma back in the days. Well, instant brilliance, that's when you know people so well that they give you a few sketchy facts about, oh, I'm kind of experiencing this, and you can just sum it up in a moment because you know them. You know people like them so well. So, first of all, experiencing that type of connection one-to-one with your clients is really important before you start facilitating groups, because it's really easy to get into a slightly less personal conversation when you've got a group of people in front of you. And truly, for group coaching to be extraordinary, there's got to be more happening. It's not just a workshop with a small group of people. It's something else.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about this shift that you that you've been sharing with us about shifting from selling to relationship. Are there any practical steps that people can take to create that mindset shift for themselves?
Yeah. There certainly are. And one thing is, if I'm assuming, maybe wrong, but I'm assuming everyone here already has some relationships with people who are interested in what they do, whether they've developed a real mailing list or whether they've got real clients. I don't really know, but I'll bet they've got at least a few people who are enthusiastic about what they do. And I would say to everyone here, just as a little exercise, why not take a look at your list, or even, you know, take a look inside your brain and ask yourself, so if I was going to make a list of who my true fans are, who would they be? And ask yourself, who spends money with you year after year? Or who tells all their friends about you? Because sometimes they're not the same people. But also notice the kinds of things they say. I was working with a coach recently who she's signed up with a number of my programs, and she's just a fantastic coach with a lot of great experience. She was helping me with something that I didn't know about already, and we started talking about collaborating on a live event together. And the thing that she said about it kind of surprised me, because I don't think of myself this way, but she said, I want to do this just so I can meet you, because I've been working with you for so long and it's always been over the phone. I'd love to do a live event with you just to meet. And that was sweet, but I wasn't thinking of it in terms of that. Most of us are more modest than that. We don't really think of having true fans. But if you don't really acknowledge your fans for who they are and how they feel about you, you're probably shortchanging them a little bit. So I would say start with a list and ask yourself who spends money, who's really enthusiastic, who are the people who say, wow, you earned your monthly fee in 1.5 hour. When they say those kinds of amazing things, those are your true fans. Make a list of those people, and maybe those are the people that you want to call. You might even make a practice out of calling them, you know, maybe a couple of times a year just to see how they're doing, not because you've got something to sell, not because even that you want to know something that they can tell you about what they want, but just to check in with them and see how they're doing. If they really feel that way about you, they will really value and be happy with the fact that you called them up. So that's one thing you can do. But there are just so many other ways that you can express yourself. One little thing that I do is every now and then, I don't do it that often, but every now and then I'll send flowers to one of my clients. And it's usually because something big happened. So they had an important birthday, or they had surgery, or something. And the first time I had a coach do that with me, my dog had died. And I was pretty heartbroken about it, and we'd had a conversation about it. And then just out of the blue, about 24 hours later, I got a beautiful bouquet of flowers and a really heartfelt note. And I kept that note on my refrigerator for years afterwards. It really meant a lot to me, because a lot of people don't really consider the death of a pet to be a big deal, so you don't get a lot of flowers or any of that. But she got it. And just having one person get how heartbroken I was made just an extraordinary difference. And so I wait for those moments when that kind of an acknowledgement will really make a difference. It doesn't have to be a whole lot.
No, it doesn't. And one of the interesting things that I've noticed too, Julia, is that by being a true fan myself, I find that I'm attracting some true friends. It's like really interesting how that happens.
Yeah.
So one of the things also that I would say is notice who you're a true fan of. And just notice the qualities of what it is about those people that that really pulls you in. There's something about them that has you be a true fan. And one of the things that I do that I remember when I would find people that I just adored, I would just really just feel their energy, just like what it felt like when I was around them. And I would just practice being in that. I would just like kind of like sinking into a luxurious bubble bath kind of feel. And just really get into the feeling of what it feels like when you're around someone that elicits that kind of response from you, that inspires you into taking action, into being more of yourself, because they're being so brilliant and you're so getting who they are that in your being that way, there's something about that energy that's really powerful.
It is. There's something juicy and wonderful and makes life so much more, I don't know what, meaningful, great. There are no words to describe it. But when you're living in that place yourself, you're right. You start attracting people, and most of all, you start cultivating it in yourself and making it yours. So it's not so much about copying them. It's really, I just shared this with some of my students. It's a Zen koan. So how do you hide inside of a pillar? Well, the answer is if you meditate on what it would mean to hide inside of a pillar and you get close enough to the pillar in your mind, eventually you become one with it. And it's not faking. It's a real change in your consciousness. So you can do that. I certainly did that when I was an early-on dance teacher. I was petrified. I would make mistakes. And I would just sort of try on my favorite ballet teacher. It wasn't so much copying her, is just kind of appropriating a little bit of her consciousness, her wisdom. And it only took me a couple of days of being my ballet teacher for me to fully embody myself as a ballet teacher. But I just needed that stepping stone, and there are people out there who can provide that to us. And we can just use our intuition and our feelings to know, hey, this is one of those people for me.
Absolutely. And the other thing that you pointed out that's really been priceless for me, too, that I've noticed is acknowledging others. You know, just in that being a true fan, just pointing out. I can't tell you how many people said yes to my interview.
That's great.
Because, you know, when I'm looking around to see who I interview, I've got to connect. I've got to be a fan.
Yeah.
And so when I write to them, I'm a true fan.
Yeah.
You know, and I let them know what I love about them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really want to interview them. I'd love to have them and share them with people, with, you know, the folks in my community. And I'll tell you, and it's never coming from a place that's not true, because it really is true fan. It has to be something genuine. But as you go around and you start looking at what is wonderful about people, the other thing that it does, this is a really juicy piece, Julia, is that you really start shifting your mindset from looking at what's wrong to what's right.
Yeah. And even in a even more subtle way, to just looking at what is and being joyful about it.
Yeah. I can tell you've been studying with a Zen master.
Sorry.
What is my favorite? Yeah. Wonderful. So we've got some questions, but I wanted to ask you one more before I get to folks' questions. What are some of the skills that that you acquire in coach training that can be really so profound in your business?
Yeah, great question. And I should own up to a bit of a bias. I actually think we're getting to a point in the world where people need to be different in business. The old paradigms of, you know, well, business is all about money and then everything else is separate. That's all crumbling. We can see how well that works. The past year has given us an extraordinary lesson in that. Coaching is, to me, and again, I have a bias, it's like the quintessential conscious business. It has really grown up just in the past couple of decades as people are starting to move into the whole concept of conscious business. And it also contains many of the skills that people need to relate in a whole new kind of way. And you can do this in relationships that are unpaid, but you can do it in a very clean way in relationships where people are paying you, or you're paying them, or both of you are paying each other. But one of the skills is the ability, this is the most basic skill, the ability to make it all about them, not about your agenda, your need to make a sale and pay the mortgage and all of that, but rather about what do they really need? And that requires that you get your ego a little bit out of the way. It's not going to disappear altogether, and it doesn't have to, but get it out of the way so you can genuinely focus on what they need and what they want. That opens up a whole different kind of experience for them, and it's a difference that they notice, and most people really value it, because we go through the world feeling like nobody really sees us, that we have to kind of scrape and claw to get what we want, and it is possible to completely turn that around and give people what they need. And then you get what you need as a byproduct of that very often. So that's thing number one. And you mentioned acknowledgement. So validation, acknowledgement, there are so many different ways of doing it. But not just making it all about them, but really seeing what their truth is and naming it. And if you can go even a step beyond, and this is more getting into the masterful coach level, but seeing what they're growing into. And acknowledging that, Wow, that just has so much value to a person.
Yeah. Seeing their brilliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seeing their brilliance, which they either aren't aware of or they're aware of it, but they don't want to be egotistical, so they're hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
If you see it and name it and invite it out, that changes their life forever.
Yeah. It's almost like those kind of experience when you have a child and when you're a child and you think you can't do something and some teacher or coach tells you you can.
Yeah, you can do that.
It just because they said you could.
Yep, you trust them more than yourself.
so you get to that place where you see it and you can be it for yourself. That is, you know, we don't stop needing that, you know, as adults. On the contrary, being inspired into greatness is an ongoing evolution.
And is
one of the gifts of coaching, I do believe.
Absolutely. Yeah, we all need that to be our best. I'm very fond of quoting Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google. He was asked recently what was the best advice he ever got, and he said it was getting a coach. And he said everyone needs a coach. You just don't know how you're coming across unless you've got somebody who's willing to be there with you, tell you the truth. They see your greatness, but they also call you on your junk.
They sure do. I just wanted, and Madison Gray, who is a brilliant coach, checked in and wanted
hey,
to
Madison.
Say hello.
Yeah, she's really awesome. Oh well,
so,
speaking of Madison, in addition to acknowledgement, curiosity.
Oh yes,
that's one of the really huge things. The things that we're curious about, as well as the things that the other person is curious about. If we just investigate those things, we don't have to know it all. In fact, as a coach, I think if you feel like you know what's going on, you're probably in deep doo-doo. But if you're curious about what's going on and curious about what they're curious about, you tend to have really extraordinary conversations.
Yeah, definitely. All righty, so I wanted to take time for some questions because I know that you've got a really great offer for us at the end of the call. Yeah, I'm excited about that. This is from Cheryl in San Jose, California.
Okay.
After leaving a corporate job as a hair replacement stylist, I went into business for myself, and she wants to know, how does she get back the clients that it took her 4 years to build, and they'd love to work with her, but due to a 2-year contract, she can't service those clients, so her business is really slow.
Uh-huh.
And she's gotten client referrals, but how does she start over? I guess building new relationships.
Yeah. Well, one thing might be to be curious about who is excited about her and what she does. So that's a possibility, but not knowing Cheryl very well, I don't know how far we can go with that. But, you know, I think you kind of touched on it, or maybe she touched on it. So she's got a contract, it sounds like, that says that she can't directly contact the clients that she had in the company where she worked previously.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wants to honor that contract, and that's especially important when you're a conscious-preneur to honor your agreements. But referrals, those people could perhaps refer to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she might want to be in contact with them, not to ask them for their business. She can call them up and say, listen, I've got a contract and I can't work with you until, you know, 2011 or whatever. But in the meantime, I'm just wondering, what is it you need in the future that a business like mine might provide to you? Because you are really my ideal client. And so I want to make sure that I'm giving service that will be of value to you. That may not pay the bills in the meantime, but that can help to cement your relationship with those people. And you can always say, by the way, if you feel inclined to refer to me, I would so appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we don't normally do is ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask for referrals, which can be so easy. And people, if they're really happy with you and if they're fans, they love your work,
Yeah.
They want to share it with their friends, too. They may not, you know, be that conscious of it. And if you just ask them, they will most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so absolutely. The people that you are serving and people that you've helped a lot, you know, if you're somebody who helps people without having an agenda, et cetera, that kind of builds up. And over time, you have so much positive regard in their, they feel so much positive regard for you that you can ask them for something and they'll be happy to do it. In fact, I consider this kind of a, this is kind of a little litmus test. If there's nobody out there that you can ask a favor of, you're probably not giving enough. That's at least what I tell myself if I'm feeling that way.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you're giving, it does come back to you. There's no doubt about it.
People are happy to help.
Yeah, maybe not even directly from who you think it might come, because that's another thing that can happen with Cheryl.
Yeah.
By just even asking Cheryl, you've set the universe in motion. Right? And
yeah.
And it may come from an unlikely. So the other thing that I always say to folks too, Julia, is, you know, once you set out an intention like that, just look for how it's going to show up. Don't assume that it's going to come how you think it will.
Mm-hmm.
Often, you're surprised at how it comes to you.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really great point. It's often surprising. You know, all kinds of things could happen. So there could be somebody listening on this call who needs what Cheryl has, and now they're curious about who Cheryl is. and, you know, I'm just thinking back to a time when Madison was coaching me one day, and I was, I don't know, deep in my story, you know, how can I do this, blah, 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 blah. Oh, woe is me. And she said, well, how could you do it? And so just by shifting from how can I to how could I,
right,
can open up a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, wonderful. So our next question is from Sharon in the UK. I graduated from university 8 years ago with a degree in art. Since then, I've been working in the field of equality and human rights. And she loves the work, but she wants to get back to her art, and she'd like to make a living at it. She's got lots of conflicting intentions about, you know, the worth of her work and, you know, its saleability. And so she wanted to know what's a good balance between creating artwork that feeds her, that's meaningful, while also having good business sense?
Ooh, that is a great question. You know, I was an artist long ago, and it seemed like art and business were oil and water back then. You know, if you wanted to make any money as a choreographer, you had to go begging to all the foundations and hope they give you some money. But if Sharon is a visual artist, then obviously there's always the possibility to sell her work. And setting prices can be a challenge. But here's a different way of thinking about it. I think if I became an artist today, instead of going with the old paradigm of I am the artist and whatever my inspiration is has intrinsic value and the audience should just be enlightened by me and my whatever talent and brilliance. That's kind of how people thought back then. But I think I actually find creating a business is far more fulfilling and creative in a sense, because I'm creating it in concert with my clients. Because I am paying attention to what they want and what they need, instead of just coming up with, well, I like to do this, so I'm going to do this, and if they have any sense, they'll buy it. I try to create what they want, and if they don't buy it, I create something else. I try to get better at creating what they want. And so she might want to, if she's inspired by it, not only look at what her artistic creativity wants to make, but also what people want, what will enlighten them, what will make their lives more beautiful or somehow more aware, whatever it is she wants to transmit through her art. So actually start to have a conversation through her art or even by normal means with the people who are her audience and develop it that way, it's probably a quicker means towards finding a way of making some money with art than if you just follow your inner muse and hope that somebody will buy it.
Yeah, I think those old paradigms of artists are really... I had an art gallery for a while, so
yes,
I have some
right.
inside information on this.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've really noticed that's really kind of wacky is, you know, there needs to be some kind of disconnect between, and this may sound really, you know, like a catch-22 here, but there needs to be a disconnect from trying to make money with your art the old way. I think a lot about art, a lot of what's happening now is about bringing your artistry to life. And it probably won't look like anything that you've seen before. And what's really being called from each one of us now is to really create something sparkling and new. And so, for me, I think business is the way to go. And bringing your business to life is an art. And one of the interesting things about making money is that once you are feeling really sustained with your work, the rest of you creatively comes alive, and you'll be surprised at the kind of things that will show up, the possibilities, the business ideas. So I think one of the things where we get stuck is in this feeling of feeling the abundant flow. Once we feel the abundant flow, then, you know, how to make how to bring your art into the world in a way that feels right to you, you may come up with new models, new ideas of how to combine your art with your business.
Yeah. You said a mouthful.
Yeah, I did. I did.
That's pretty exciting.
One more quick question, and then we'll go. And this one's pretty quick. This is from Achu in Mumbai. When starting, how do you convince your potential online client that you are real and create a relationship?
That's such a great question, and you answered that in part, Adela, when you said you just put your phone number there. People are, I have the same thing. People call me, and I answer the phone. They think, oh my God, I didn't expect you to answer. But that's one of the most effective ways to do it. The other way is to operate with integrity, so that time and again you show up like a real person, and you do what you say you're going to do. And I think when you're starting with a small business also, rather than having a lot of policies and this is how we do things and, you know, this is what you get if you want your money back and blah, blah, why not just deal with people on a person-to-person basis and just be human?
Mm-hmm.
That communicates a whole different level of involvement.
Yeah, there's... I've had plenty of opportunities to play around with this myself.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when you come out of this program place of, giving very little because you don't want to give away, like, your trade secrets, whatever that is.
Yeah.
as you were mentioning earlier on the call, that is so the old.
Your trade secrets aren't worth what they used to be.
No, and not only that, but you know what's interesting? Your trade secrets are being out there done by loads and loads of people.
Usually.
Because if you've got an idea, you can bet that somebody else has that idea too, and they're actually delivering on it somewhere on the planet.
Probably.
I have found myself when I've created something that I was like, oh, I came up with this. And then I go on the Internet, and I see the same language used by someone else, the same idea by someone else.
Uh-huh.
So this open book kind of thing that you're talking about, Julia, about being really real, about being genuine, about, you know, checking in and seeing what's right in this moment if you're dealing with a customer, like a customer service issue. You know, and seeing, you know, what's the best way to deal with it is to speak to the person and figure out what's the best way to deal with it.
My core come from with all of that is just I'm here to make it right. You know, I'm not promising in every case that I'll give you your money back, but if I'm falling short of what you thought you needed, if you're not getting where I said I could take you, then I need to find a better way to do it, and I'm responsible for that. People value that.
Okay, wonderful. Well, folks are asking me for the secret password for the coaching training, so we better move into that.
Good.
So can you tell us a bit about the free live coach training that's coming up with you?
Yeah, it's coming up in, I better pull up a calendar so I can tell you the dates. It's coming up in about 2 weeks. It's 4 days in a row. Let's see here. Come on, calendar. It's
November 30th to December 3rd.
Thank you. You're saving me.
Yeah.
And it's 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And we will be over the phone just like this. It's called Coaching Groundwork. And it is 8 very simple skills that anyone can use, but they're also very powerful, very effective. One of the most common things that I hear from people who take it is they can't believe how much they learned, how quickly, and that it's actually changing their lives already. But it's a program for new coaches. And it's also for people who may not necessarily want to be a coach, but who could stand to develop some relating skills and some communication skills that will help them to develop true fans and deliver even better service with their businesses. And so the way I do it is they get to sign up for free. And I know I did this about 6 months ago with a group from one of your other programs, and a few of them are on the call today.
Yeah.
And so you take the program for free, and then anyone who wants to take an additional program from us, one of our coach training programs, it's schoolofcoachingmastery.com, will give them a $200 discount. And, of course, we also have payment plans so that they can manage it. But it's a pretty cool program. They'll learn about using curiosity and about making it all about the other person and acknowledgement and building systems and structures that will help the person actually succeed at what they're doing rather than just having an edifying conversation about it.
Wonderful. Let me give them the, and I took it last year too, and I did coach
yeah.
training way back when, and it was wonderful. So let me give folks the link, and then you can give them the secret password.
Uh-oh, so I need to pull up the password. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, well, don't worry about it, folks. I'll email it to you if you don't.
Okay.
If you can't
get it,
Julie.
Did I send it to you, Adela?
No, you didn't. It's really a secret.
Oh, it's a
so,
secret even to me.
It's coachingbusinesstelesummit.com/coaching, and I will send the secret password via the post call email. And if anyone doesn't get the email from me, you can always email me at Adela, A-D-E-L-A, at AdelaRubio.com. And I am happy to answer your questions, and I will give you the information for this wonderful coach training that's coming up. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
So, folks, I'm just going to unmute Julia. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, my pleasure.
It was wonderful being with you here today. So I'm just going to unmute our line so we can say goodbye. It's always great to hear everyone on the phone. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All righty.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank
you,
Adela.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a great night.